Our next guest waiting, we've got Lionel Bopagay on the line. Lionel is a human rights political activist, a one-time central leader of the Sri Lankan People's Liberation Front, the JVP, who's now active in the Melbourne Sri Lankan community. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Lionel. Oh, why can't I hear? One second. That's been... Sorry, listeners, just a few technical difficulties. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, sorry, I accidentally... That was my fault, comrade. I forgot to press the on-air button. Sorry to listeners as well. We're joined by Lionel Bopagay. He's going to give us an update on what's happening with the economic crisis in Sri Lanka. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, comrade. Okay.
So the popular uprising in Sri Lanka, Lionel, that removed that autocratic president and war criminal Rajapaksa, we just wanted to know, you know, since he was removed, what actually has changed for the people under the new regime?
Yeah, it is a good question. Actually, nothing much has changed, but there are some superficial changes. If I explain further, instead of the previous president who fled the country, the new president, the previous president was elected to the presidency, whereas the new president was not elected. He was appointed by the parliament, where the majority of members of parliament are those who were elected under the Sri Lanka Bodhijan Peramuna, the party that brought the previous president to power with a huge majority. So under the new president, nothing in the system of governance has changed. Corruption, wastage, and mismanagement of the economy, those things clearly continue. The previous president is back in the country. The corrupt lot are still holding power, whether they are politicians or bureaucrats. Those who appear to have a tainted history are reappointed to ministries. One of those ministers, for example, the Minister of Health, he was taken into custody due to the pressure exerted by the civil society for his alleged corrupt activities conducted during the purchase and supply of medication, which is an essential need for the people of Sri Lanka. Mm. The president has been able to break the people's struggle. His political party, the United National Party, had a group mainly representing the middle class in the urban centers of Sri Lanka, and they took part in the Aragalaya, the struggle movement. This group had some significant influence, but as soon as the previous president jumped the ship and the new president took over, they abandoned the struggle. Thus, the unity between various groups representing the middle class, the youth, the students, and the lower classes, that unity was broken. Yet we need to understand that the workers who are better organized under diverse trade unions and party affiliated, they were not seen much in action except for certain trade unions, but they were not so strong unions. The students and the young people, the youth, who continued the struggle had multiple groups, from progressive end to politically non-aligned, and there were independents. And there were issues among these groups as well, as they were attempting to put their seal on the struggle and to consolidate the whole struggle movement under their umbrella. As the previous regime did, heavy repressive violence was launched against those who continued the struggle. They used the police, the armed forces, and at times those appeared to be mercenaries, and the water cannons, baton charges, and all those repressive measures were used. Economically speaking, the new regime was able to gain a loan from the International Monetary Fund as the debt repayments are at a halt, and with several countries such as China, India, Bangladesh, and so on. They have been helping out the regime in various ways through currency swaps and so on. The regime has been able to provide some concessions to the middle classes by making electricity and fuel available to them, but at much higher prices. The economic burden is unloaded on the working people, mainly by increasing taxes, such as value-added tax, and including many items, many other items, including essentials under the value-added tax bracket. And those items were not included previously under the value-added tax bracket. Thus, the burden is unloaded on the lower classes, while the usual play of corruption, wastage, and mismanagement continues. With the structural reforms demanded by the International Monetary Fund, though they are not prescribed by by the IMF, the regime has to decide what specific action has to be taken. Many service provisions are being privatized and commercialized. This varies from provident funds to government agencies covering electricity, telecommunications, petroleum, and those agencies that are providing services to the populace of Sri Lanka. To divert attention, the regime states that only loss-making enterprises will be commercialized or privatized. But most of those agencies on sale are those that are making profit. On the other hand, government agencies do not have to make a profit, as they are established mainly for the purpose of serving the populace by making service provisions available to them. And in addition, there are growing concerns due to the new repressive measures that the government is aiming to take to curtail freedom of expression and association mainly. So, for example, there is a proposed counterterrorism law that are being subject to discussion. This threatens to grant authorities sweeping powers to suppress dissent. This raises fears about the erosion of democratic values, and disturbingly, discriminatory policies and social exclusion of non-majoritarian communities continue, thus deepening social divisions. And in addition, the Online Safety Commission that will be established under the new Online Safety Act is set to control social media, and it is going to impose over censorship and may demand removal of social media posts, the content, within 24 hours without judicial oversight. They say they are going to appoint a commission or something with 5 members, and if that commission says to remove it, they have to remove it. And thus, what happens is online satirical jokes may no longer be available to be used to expose corruption and dishonesty of politicians. Now, the regime and the ultra-right conservative political groups have started their usual games in preparation of the presidential elections that could be held this year and the general elections that could be held next year. Distribution of items, as has done previously in many elections, now this time it is a 5 kilogram bag of rice. And they also provide financial assistance under a heavily politicized program called Aswasuma. And also distribution of land titles under another program called Urumaya. So they have all started these. They are being undertaken now, and this is nothing peculiar to Sri Lanka, I would say, because this is the same that happened in many countries, including Argentina, Ghana, Pakistan, etc., who have received IMF assistance and assistance from other lending agencies. most of such assistance will be diverted to election area. And after the victory of the regime, once again, they will go back to the IMF and other international financial lending agencies with begging bowl in hand. Those agencies are also happy because a regime that maintains the existing system of governance will remain in power.
Yeah, thanks, Lionel. I think Rob also wants to ask you a question. Over to you, Rob.
Oh, hello, Lionel. Actually, I want to ask you three questions, and if you forget what the second and third ones are, just ask me and I'll repeat them. My first question, anyway, is the struggle in Sri Lanka disrupting the political stability? I specifically say political. Second question was, is the struggle costing businesses really a lot? And my final question is, you did refer to the unionized workers, and I'm just wondering if the rank and file unionized workers have a very strong mood of resistance. You know, what's the mood like among the rank and file unionized workers? Okay, good luck.
Yeah, sorry, comrade. You may have to repeat the question, right? Because I have already forgotten the first one. I am unwell, as you know. I have very bad memory.
No. Yeah, you can. Did you want to repeat them?
Yeah, if you could.
Look,
go one
I'll do it one
one
at a time. I'll do it one at a time.
We are running. Yeah. Just before you answer the questions, Lionel. We don't have too much time. We only have about 5 to 6 minutes left for the interview.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry,
I'll just pick the one that is the most important. Let me see. Okay, the rank and file unionized workers. What's the mood, you know, among them? I'm not really interested in the trade union bureaucracy or even the political parties, but what's the mood of your ordinary rank and file unionized workers?
Yeah, because they are suffering and they want to resist, but they don't know what to do. Now, most of the trade union movement in Sri Lanka, I mean, I'm not talking about the bureaucracies, but the general trade union movement, it is under the umbrella of the JVP. JVP has the strongest trade unions. Mm. But unfortunately, they didn't take part in the struggle. And they do not seem to have the intention of immediately taking part in any struggle. After the struggle, what happened is the struggle weakened as a result of what the government did. And there are struggles all over Sri Lanka, including in the north and east, but with different purposes in mind. With regard to workers, as you said, they do not seem to be in the mood of taking part in another struggle as such, unless there is awareness raising among these people by the civil society, the progressive forces, and others who are interested in democratic rights. And there is some sort of organization. That is one of the major experiences from the previous struggle, because there was no organization as such that led that struggle. At least, you know, sort of a common platform among the groups that took part in the struggle. And there were some trade unions that were taking part in the struggle, but it was very weak. And there was, at a certain stage, there was an emphasis on launching a general strike that was towards the end of the struggle. And as soon as they launched the struggle, general strike, the JVP walked out. Mm. And that ruined the whole the trade union struggle. You know, sort of that was intended to be the main backbone of that struggle. At the moment, as far as I can see, there is no intention on the part of the workers to go for an immediate struggle. But I think there is a lot of mobilization among other sectors. For example, the young people, the students, the women. They are mainly mobilized by the JVP, and there are other groups like Frontline Socialist Party and so on. They are also mobilizing, but the main mobilization takes place under the JVP. And they seem to be increasing in popularity, but at the same time, I don't know how far they are organized, in the sense to confront the state repression that will be launched in future. And because the situation in Sri Lanka is dire, not only the workers, even other sectors of the society, they are suffering. Various aspects. I mean, there is food insecurity, human rights violations, the freedoms are affected. So almost all people in the lower classes in society, they are suffering. But they do not have that organization and awareness for the need to struggle and to change the system of governance.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lana. We wish we had more time with you, comrade, but I guess just to wrap up the interview, I mean, you have sort of talked about how people are mobilizing on the ground and you know, the fact that there are protests are actually continuing. And it was really inspirational to see the popular uprising, Aragalaya, in Sri Lanka. But, you know, with it's there's a lot of new repressive measures that seem to be taking away a lot of people's freedoms of expression and everything. So we appreciate the update that you've given us. I guess, like, to wrap up, maybe could you sort of tell us a little bit about how what's happening with Tamil and Muslim communities in the north and the east, particularly due to some of this debt restructuring initiated under the International Monetary Fund. And also, if you can, because there are protests continuing for all sorts of reasons, would you be able to also tell us about maybe some of the anti-war protests in solidarity with Palestine in Sri Lanka?
Okay. Yeah. Now, the political landscape with regard to Tamil and Muslim communities, especially Tamil communities, seem to be changing. Now, the regime led by Ranil Wickremesinghe, president, they're talking about providing a solution. They have been talking about providing a solution for decades now. And they are trying to, I mean, because elections are said to be approaching, and the president is trying to win over some of the Tamil votes. And for that, he is canvassing among the Tamil people. What has happened is the main grouping, not the militant grouping, the parliamentary representatives of the Tamil people, that's the Tamil United Liberation Front, the leadership has changed. And Mr. Sridharan has taken the leadership, and Mr. Sridharan is supposed to be more nationalistic as well as more, from the point of view of the South, so more militant. And during the Independence Day, on the 4th of February, there were protests in the North and East, and even abroad, even in Canberra, there was a protest in front of the Sri Lankan High Commission by the Tamil community, a small group. But they seem to be more militant. So apparently, the militancy or militant currents are again on the rise, it seems. And with North and East, the protests continue, you know, because there are so many broken promises with regard to looking at their grievances and problems, and with regard to what happened to the disappeared people, their land rights, and so on. Nothing has been addressed. So it is like a powder keg, I would say. You know, sort of, we don't know at what time it would burst. With regard to Palestine, we have to understand that in Sri Lanka, there is a peculiar situation. For example, during the Second World War, there were groups in Sri Lanka who supported Hitler. They were extreme nationalist Sinhalese, because they thought that Hitler is said to be from Aryans, you know, Sinhalese are said to be from the Aryan descendancy. Mm. So they had this connection. They were supporting Hitler. And in Vitkato, Palestine, most of the progressive people have been supporting Palestine, and they have been against the Israeli aggression since 1948. And but what happened is, with mainly, I would say, with regard to the JVP, when they gave up their international stand, they are no more, they do not seem to be speaking about other struggles that are happening all over the world. But still, there have been small groups, progressives as well as some independent groups, who have been vocal in supporting Palestine. They had protests in front of the American embassy as well. And but Sri Lanka in general supports the two-state solution, but Ranil Wickremesinghe has been supporting the Israel on the pretext that the whole thing was launched because of the, what happened on the 7th of October. And as we all know, the whole thing didn't start on the 7th of October. We have to look at the history and the context as to the, what circumstances those things happened. Now, in Israel, there is a strong Sri Lankan, there is about 9,000 Sri Lankans, they say, in Sri Lanka. But the government was trying to send some more Sri Lankans, because the Israeli government was getting rid of Palestinian people, you know, sort of from employment in Israel. And they were, India and Sri Lanka, both of them, both countries were trying to send their own people for employment in Israel. And I heard that Sri Lanka has sent about 20,000 people to Israel. So, and then there was another step, because you know, what happened in the Red Sea, the government decided to send another ship by sending naval ships to Sri Lanka. The Wickremesinghe government is effectively, they are joining the US-led imperialist coalition in support of the genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza.
Yeah,
so that is the general situation. Sorry.
No, sorry, I interrupted you. thanks, comrade, for joining us on the program this morning. We will have to wrap up the interview, but before we do, was there anything else you wanted to let listeners know?
There have been some developments I would like to mention, because there was a recent visit organized by the central government of India, and they invited the National People's Power, a delegation led by Comrade Andhra Kumar Dishanayake, to visit India, and they are still, I think, a five-day visit. They are still continuing with it. And it is a major development in the sense, you know, sort of say, now the JVP has been a vocal campaigner against India under the slogans of Indian expansionism, anti-Indianism, and so on, especially during the end of 1980s, like. And since then, they have given up some of those slogans and so on. But I think it is an important step because it is denoting the recognition of the JVP as a developing, growing major political force in Sri Lanka. So I just wanted to make the listeners aware of that situation.
No, thank you. Thanks so much, Comrade Lionel. And for listeners just tuning in, we were just talking to Lionel Bopage, a human rights political activist and one-time central leader of the Sri Lankan People's Liberation Front, JVP. Thank you so much for joining us, Lionel, and we'll have you back on the show hopefully soon.
Thank you very much, Comrade Claudia.
Cheers, Lionel.
Thank you.
Yeah, great.
Bye-bye.
Bye.